Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsberg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know, and we are here to talk about some news that has been stirring up as of late. There's been a couple comments here and there on various media platforms about some drama around the Pelicans, and I figured this would be a good time to recap what's been said and kind of address what's going on. Joining me, as always, is Mason Ginsberg. Mason, you've I'm assuming kept up with some of the news recently. So, just was for the fans, just for the listeners, Nate Duncan and John Hollinger, I've talked about on their podcast about Zion being unhappy in vague and unspecific terms. And then today, Sam Amick said on a Sacramento radio show that the players didn't necessarily get along with Stan. I forgot the exact quote was, but he said, I think that's essentially exactly what he said, that the Stan and the players don't get along and there's some drama there or whatever there is. But yeah, Mason, I'm assuming you've kind of stayed in the loop on this stuff.
Yeah, I have. I think one thing to keep in mind here is the source that it's coming from. I think there's some, we've got to find the right balance between reading the tea leaves, like reading between the lines on this, because like Sam Amick and Duncan and Hollinger, those are all reputable guys. Like, I think it's easy for us to just roll our eyes when stuff like that pops up. But I think the real work that has to be done and what we wanted to talk about in this podcast is really what's beneath the surface. What is actually going on versus just like when there's smoke, there's not always fire. And I think that's when with a talent like Zion and a situation like New Orleans in, we want to always find like, oh, what's the drama that's going on? And so I think it's important to really level set on this topic. So it's good that we're doing this.
Yeah, no, great point. I figure we can kind of just dive into the assertions, if that's fair to call them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we can start talking about Stan Van Gundy. And what this season was for the Pelicans. And this was not an easy season for the team. And, you know, the players have said that. Griff has said that. It's come across painfully clear in Stan Van Gundy's press conferences as well. And obviously every single team went through the COVID protocols and the rough year. And so this is not me excuse making. This is just me, you know, I guess setting the background as to what's gone on. And so beyond all the COVID stuff, it was a challenging year because one, there was a lot of roster turnover, two, new coach, new system, short training camp, all that, yada, yada, yada. You've heard that stuff. And on top of that, they were just not a good team this year. They lost a lot of games. And when you lose a lot of games and you have competitors such as Stan Van Gundy, such as Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and a lot of other players on the team, there's going to be friction. People are not going to be happy with the outcomes. People are going to get on each other's nerves. People may lash out. And so, you know, I think it would be more problematic if this was a losing season and people were complacent about it and they didn't react to it. And they, you know, everything was perfect and happy-go-lucky. I think that would be more of a problem, in my opinion. But with regards to Stan specifically, he is a very intense coach. He is very, very, very different from Alvin Gentry. I mentioned this on one of the Twitter spaces, but when it comes to making trains run on time, there is perhaps no coach more meticulous than Stan Van Gundy. There's no coach perhaps more meticulous than Stan Van Gundy when it comes to the preparation against opponents, when it comes to preparation of game plan, when it comes to preparation of practice. And Stan is really intense when it comes to that stuff. And if you're winning, it's really easy to kind of go with the flow. And if you're losing, it can be grating. It can be difficult at times and challenging. And so it's definitely not everyone's cup of tea. There have been several players on the roster who it was a little bit of a culture shock for them coming off of Alvin Gentry, coming off of even Luke Walton before that, who is a similar coach to Alvin Gentry, to be coached by a hard-nosed old school coach such as Stan Van Gundy. Some of those guys adapted. Some of those guys didn't, and you know, relationships changed through as the year went on. But you know, there are definitely guys on the team, and I tweeted about this, who would much rather spend practice just shooting threes, not really doing things at a serious or a high level, you know, practicing infrequently, practicing only 45 minutes, then, you know, go through the regimented stuff that Stan had planned for them. And then, you know, it's not like Stan had a ton of practices this year to really.
I don't mean to interrupt. Can we level set for a bit though on that too, specifically? Yeah. And so when you talk about 45 minute practices, I want to be clear. Is that basically what Gentry was running? Is that what certain teams in the league, from your experience, is that what some teams do? Like, where does this expectation or preference come from? Or is it an example?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think I forget who it was. I think it was JJ. It was someone at the beginning of the year basically had this quote. Maybe it was Jackson that, yeah, like Alvin was doing 45-minute practices. These are like 2 hours right. long.
Yeah.
And so as far as practice goes, it varies from team to team in the NBA. You have teams like the Clippers last year under Doc who barely practiced at all. And then most of their stuff was shoot-arounds and, you know, like it was just low-key keeping guys healthy and it was just maintenance stuff, right? You know, they're a high-level team. They don't need that much. And then, you know, that they ended up biting them because some players didn't like that. They felt like it was catering too much to the schedule of Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, or they felt like it didn't have enough time to install culture, whatever. But they didn't practice that much. And then, you know, you have guys like Monty and Tibbs who practice a ton. And they really use that as time to install all kinds of things. And, you know, I don't think Tibbs has practiced a ton this year. I think for the most part this year in the NBA, coaches have not practiced a ton just because of the schedule constraints and the condensed nature of the year. And for the large part, the enormous COVID restrictions that the season had. So, but in the practices that Stan did have this year, especially early on in the year, I think this changed dramatically as the year went on, especially early on in the year. Like it was they were hard practices. And you know, we kind of heard Stan talk about it in like the first few weeks. It's like, yeah, I'm not even concerned about the offense. I'm worried about transition defense. I'm worried about, you know, rebounding, all these things. And those are difficult practices. And some players didn't like that because, you know, they're coming off of a few coaches who had a more laissez-faire approach to practice. And so again, take this for what it is or whatever you want to take it as, but you know, over the course of the year, some guys just didn't adjust and they grew more and more, I don't want to say like sour, but like, you know, like once you already have like a preconceived notion of a person, like, oh, like, you know, Stan's going to make us practice. And then he does exactly that. And then he just kind of reconfirms your belief. That's what happened with some players. Some players like Jackson Hayes, who also went through the culture shock and then came out the other end, a completely different player. And, you know, someone completely bought into the team, completely bought into improving himself, his role, and kind of had a reality check like, oh, this is what it would take to succeed in the league. You know, some players really benefited from that. I think, you know, I think Jackson's one of those players. I think Nikhil has kind of always been one of those players. Is like, you can coach him pretty hard. I'm pretty much from everything I hear about Nikhil, he's the first guy in the gym. And, you know, I'm not trying to tell another one of those stories where it's like, oh, this guy's like, you know, like a really like hard worker and all that. But
staying late, taking jumpers after games, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But Nikhil is legitimately, you know, like first player in the gym. And that's pretty awesome. But yeah. And so, you know, it was a little bit of a culture shock for these players, and some players adjusted, some didn't. And the players that didn't adjust, they like to talk to their former coaches in Sacramento. They there's two coaches there.
nice. Plausible deniability. I love it.
Yeah, there's two coaches there. But there's one main coach that was there last year that, you know, if anywho, you know who that coach is. And they like to talk to those coaches, and those coaches like to talk to the media. And some of it's off record, some of it's on record, mostly it's off record, right? And what was going on in Sacramento with the Sam Amick interview is basically they were justifying the not firing of Luke Walton, basically justifying keeping him by saying like, oh, you got all these other teams where things aren't great. You know, they used Indiana as an example. They used New Orleans as an example, and I think a couple other ones. But, you know, that was their justification. Like, oh, well, you know, at least it's not like those locker rooms. And one, you know, that's just like, some of that stuff is like just like state sponsored propaganda. Like the ownership and GM are going to tell you to say those. I mean, they're going to tell you not necessarily to say those things outright, but that's what they're going to tell you is the reality. And when the other reality is actually like, they don't want to fire Luke Walton because he has 2 years left on his contract and the Kings incurred heavy losses over all of it.
Shout out. I think you've used the term state sponsored propaganda now on two straight podcasts, and that's truly impressive work.
Yeah, man, I am. Yes. Pravda. Anywho, that one's reserved for Clutch.
Yeah.
but I think what's important here is one, Alvin is a survivor. He has made it 33 years or however many years, three decades into the NBA by making good relationships, saying the right things, politicking at the right time. He survives. And that's truly a testament to him. And he's genuinely also like a really nice dude. Like he's genuinely a very nice dude. I don't want to say he's like this, you know, chatty Cathy malicious guy, but he's very smart about what he says to who. And so like, if there's a player that, you know, call him up or, you know, run into him at the Kings game and be like, yo, coach, I miss you. You know, something as innocuous as that, or like, you know, like, I wish, you know, I could still be playing with you. Something as innocuous as that. And I'm not saying this is exactly what Alvin did, but you guys can kind of put two and two together. If there are incidences where players are, you know, expressing to him that the adjustment has been hard and they liked his system or whatever the case may be, and Alvin is telling the media things, well, there's a lot of like telephone to be played there. And especially with like how you choose to say things, who you choose to say it to, and all that. That doesn't mean, you know, there isn't like legitimate friction between, you know, Stan and some of the players on the team. Like that there are elements of truth to that. It's just important to know where those elements of truth are coming from. And I'm not trying to absolve Stan of any, you know, anything on his part. I think he is probably a really difficult person to be around in this situation when one, like, you know, all the COVID stuff's going on, but two, like, they're losing, and in the particular fashion that they were losing in. I think Stan can stand to take a few chill pills, and I think there's a time and place. Like, I think, you know, oftentimes where Stan may have a legitimate message, the way he says things sometimes, the how he says things can come off as grating or off-putting. And I think a really good example of this was he had a layup question. I was like, you know, he could have dunked this. Someone asked him, I think it was like this, two games to go or like last game, someone asked him like, oh, like how awesome, how good is like Wenyen Gabriel been in these limited minutes that you've given him? And, you know, he showed a little bit of promise, and it was like the easiest question. Like, the dude's a non-guaranteed minimum contract guy playing in a meaningless games, and you could easily be like, yeah man, we love his energy and you hope it continues to improve, whatever. You could give him, you can give a very political answer. Yeah. Alvin was great at, you know, those kind of answers. Stan, mixed bag. It's a mixed bag. And it's just like, dude, like, come on. Like, what, why can't you just like let it go? Like, be like, yeah, like he's been good. We'd like him to work on, like, you know, there's a way to say things. Like, I don't think Stan's incorrect, right? Like, he's not saying anything factually incorrect. It's one of those things. It's like, you're not wrong, but you're being an asshole. And Stan may not realize he's doing that often, and I think it can get to the point, you know, I think that kind of stuff can get exhausting over time, but I don't think, you know, it's anywhere near one of those situations where, you know, people are like, oh, he's lost the locker room, or, you know, he's the team is turning on him. I think the Pelicans are really far removed from that kind of situation.
I good to hear. I think when it comes to stuff like that, I used to just want to read too much into it. But I think the more you hear about situations like this, the more it's like, well, it's exactly what you said. It's a game of telephone. And eventually you get to a point where the delta between what actually is happening and what people are saying is happening is wide enough that we've got to talk about it. and it really, you know, address the situation. So, I mean, is that, I think what's on most people's minds when we talk about something like this, though, is just like the player specifically, not just like Stan as a coach. It's probably, it's like players, and specifically two players. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, the point you made about Jackson Hayes, about Nikhil Alexander Walker, are both great, as those are young players who, you know, ideally grow with this team and continue to improve and become in Pelicans for a while. But let's talk about the main guys, and that's really Zion and BI. And I don't think I think those are by far the two most important names to consider here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, speaking, I guess, first on BI, there's kind of this like story going around on Pel's Twitter that he, you know, there was an incident at practice or something where he was getting shots up. The music was up loud. Coaches were meeting on the court. And you know, coaches asked him to turn it down. He basically wasn't having it, something to that fact. And I think, you know, situations like that are often blown up out of proportion. And, you know, I'm not going to comment on if that story is true or not, but I will say, like, you look at teams across the NBA, like, first thing I want you guys to do is Google Draymond Green, Steve Kerr fight. And then you'll find an article every single year from 2015 that basically says, you know, literally says in the headlines, Draymond Green and Steve Kerr almost come to blows, fight, you know, their altercation almost gets physical, has to be restrained, that kind of stuff. And let me tell you, nothing with the Pelicans has gotten anything close to that. And so, like, normal, you know, getting feisty or, you know, like being chippy, that stuff happens in every single NBA locker room. And so when a team is losing and those kind of stories come out, they're often blown up and made to be much more than they actually are. And then when a team is winning and those stories come out, it's like, oh, these guys are just, you know, being competitors, right? You know, you have stories of like Marcus Smart throwing chairs or punching walls and stuff. Like you hear this, it happens in every single locker room where, you know, guys are competitors to make it in the NBA. Like you're one of 450 players. You got to have a certain level of competitor in you to even get that far. And that includes the coaches. If you're one of 30, you know, head coaches in the NBA, like you're a competitor. And Stan, you know, he hates losing. And that's, you know, that's why his like personality can reflect that at times. And NBI is as fiery as anyone. And so, you know, if something like stories that come out like that are generally, I think, blown out of proportion. And if there's true dysfunction, it spills, and it's really difficult to hide. And the players are, and the coaches, whoever wants to let the dysfunction be shown to light, they're good enough, they're media savvy enough to talk to the right people, talk to the right media, and get their stories out there. And there's a reason you haven't seen any of that with the Pelicans, because it's just not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, so I think there's a part of what you said that may take fans by surprise. And when you said BI is as fiery as anyone, I really think that, you know, when you think about the dude, the BI, who does the post game interviews, even the guy on the floor, you don't get that vibe from him, but at the same time, I think it doesn't really matter, because like you said, all these guys are competitors. They have, and there are egos for every single person on every team in the NBA. You've got to have that streak in you to make it as far as these players across the league, from the bottom to LeBron James, to make it. And so I think that's important to keep in mind, that just because a guy like BI may come off as pretty mellow and chill talking to media, or like even, you know, in the middle of the game, you don't have to be screaming after every made bucket to be a guy who really, you know, who's going to have a point of view and can have opinion, feels like their opinion should be taken seriously. And so that's kind of where this comes from, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think Andrew Lopez of ESPN are a really good example of BI being fiery, where this was last year before Brandon was had signed his max contract. They were talking about the fact that they didn't come to an agreement on an extension, and they were talking about other players who got max contracts, and BI said something like, you know, line up these motherfuckers, I'll beat every single one of them one-on-one. You know what I mean? He definitely has that in him. But with regards to his and Stan's relationship, it was definitely a culture shock for BI, given his experience in the NBA, given the previous two coaches he had. And there was definitely an adjustment period. And then there was definitely a period where, you know, like, Stan and BI didn't necessarily see eye to eye on everything. But as far as I know, that relationship got progressively better throughout the course of the season. And by the end of it, you know, they are about the same things, in terms of they both want to win, and they both understand that the roster needs to take a step forward, and that will come when the two best players also take a step forward. And so, again, I think it's one of those things where, like, we've probably all had coaches that we didn't necessarily see eye to eye with the whole time, or agree with, but it's not one of those things where we like hate that coach's guts or sick of it and then just want to leave, or, you know, anything dysfunctional like that. It's, I think it's, again, like, if you haven't played sports, consider it as a situation where you've probably like had a manager at a job that you weren't, you know, you weren't in love with. And sometimes those relationships get a lot better over time, which is what happened in this case. And sometimes they deteriorate. And sometimes you don't need it to be a great relationship. You just need it to be a work relationship. Like, you both show up, you get your work done, and you go home, and it is what it is. And you don't have to like the person you work with, which you're saying?
Yeah, no, and beyond that, even the best working relationships have bumps, right? You're not going to get along with your boss 100% of the time. That's just, it's not reality. And so I think, you know, even you can, like you're saying, you can, your relationship can improve over time, but still you're going to have bumps because of whatever things happen on the practice floor, you lose. And so there are other emotions that really take over. I mean, all these things, I feel like, just like you said, they're relatable to anyone who's at a job, not just athletes. So hopefully that resonates a little bit.
Yeah. And in fairness to BI, it was a culture adjustment for Stan as well. Like, you know, he hasn't coached in a couple of years. He's coming to a particularly young team, which I don't think he had even in Detroit. And he's coming in a really weird year where he tried to run practices and things like he would a normal year, where this year it's particularly difficult to do that. And the avenues for players to vent and blow off steam were extremely limited in the beginning of the season, when they like literally could not go see anyone. They couldn't have hotel guests. They couldn't go out. They couldn't, you know, all that kind of stuff, basically until the end of the year, until they got vaccinated. It was just off the table for them. And so when you're losing and you don't get the perks of being the NBA player that you are, and being able to wield your stardom in any city you go, and have fun outside of the job, that shit becomes difficult. And you know, for a guy like Stan, who just lives for the job, having constant exposure to him can get tiring. And so Stan had to make an adjustment himself as well as he learned how to work with the younger players. And again, I think if this was one of those things where it was deeply problematic, the stories would be coming out on, I think, bigger platforms. And not to say, like, you know, Sam Amick and Nate Duncan and John Hollinger are like irreputable. Again, like they've heard the same stuff. They've probably heard it from some of the coaches that we talked about. And
there's a reason it's a very small part of a bigger conversation on a podcast versus being something that's in an article or something that's like really a core component of something that's been written, I think is a key difference here.
Yeah. You guys have seen the Woj hit pieces when they come. You yeah. guys have, you know, even this year with the Pacers, the Nate Bjorkgren, I don't even know if I pronounce.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
That's the name, right? But basically, like, the rumors that came out about him, that, you know, the players weren't happy with him, and he's kind of he's an abrasive personality and all that, blah blah blah. You know, there's been Jason Kidd stories. You can Google them on ESPN. Like, the nightmare stories always come out if they're there, and so the players again have really good avenues to let media know what's going on if they wanted to let them know what's going on.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know, since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
And then, so the other player, Zion, I think that's much less of a concern. From everything that I've heard, Zion doesn't have a problem with coaching. It's fine with Zion. I mean, he's clearly not happy with the outcome of the season, and the fact that they were losing. And I think he really wants roster improvements. And I think the Zion conversation is a separate conversation than the Stan conversation, because it's much larger, right? I think Nate Duncan and John Hollinger were talking about Zion's unhappy. I didn't listen to Hollinger when I listened to the Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue one. And his basic premise was basically, you know, they haven't won. And Zion made these comments about New York, and I think there was a couple other things that he mentioned, but they were just a lot of like hearsay stuff. And look, Zion's a competitor. He wants to win desperately, and he doesn't want to have this legacy of missing the playoffs, knowing how good of a player that he is and he can be, especially with respect to all-time greats. He wants to be in a position to compete at those levels too. And so he's not happy with that stuff. He wasn't happy last year with some of how his minutes restrictions were handled. and his training was handled, but all that stuff is in the rear view. Like Zion had no minutes restriction issues this year, period. Stan played him how he wanted, whenever he wanted. Stan empowered him with the ball. So like coaching is not the issue in Zion's eyes. It's like, get me a good team. And so I think it's easy to sort of it, the Zion conversation, what's difficult about it is there's a level of, oh, like it's, you know, like he's young, we'll get better. We have a little bit of time. And then there's the other side of it. It's like, well, his rookie extension is up for grabs next year and he doesn't sign it, then the threat is on DEFCON level one or whatever. And it's tough to balance the conversation with Zion on that. I do think that Zion not signing that extension is more of a reality than people are comfortable acknowledging. But again, a lot can change in a season, and it's up to the coach, the front office, to supply a roster that makes a good team.
Yeah. My experience, and maybe I'm not in the right part of Pel's Twitter or overall discourse, but I feel like fans are at the point where they're comfortable acknowledging it as a risk, but maybe just because they're just sad at this point and just used to the same everything going wrong over and over again. But my experience has been it's if we say something like that, the pushback is not maybe what you might expect it to be almost, but yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this the other day, that it's, you have to approach this next season like it's a real possibility. Not saying over 50%, like let's not get carried away here, but it's not very much non-negligible chance if the next season doesn't go right.
Yeah. There's very much, you know, a doomsday scenario in play out there. I don't want to get full doomsday prophetic yet. Because again, that implies that there's a really good chance of it happening. I think it exists. I think it's not one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, no, it's a sure thing. It's not going to happen. But I think a lot of the noise with Zion, and a lot of the noise around the organization can get cleaned up really quickly if they put together a good team. And we've sort of seen it time and time again with various teams. And I talked about how the Knicks have gone from a laughingstock, their ownership was a total joke, to now no one's written anything about their ownership. No one's, you know, if the Knicks sucked this year, people will be roasting them for drafting Obi Toppin because he's not good. And they've been like, oh, LOL, it's the Knicks. They missed on another draft pick. They can't get anything right. And he's not been good, but they've been good. So no one really cares about that. Same thing with the Suns, you know, like their draft pick, Jalen Smith, the stretch four, stretch five guy that they drafted, where they could have drafted Tyrese Halliburton. They could have drafted any number of players. Actually, that would have helped them out this year. They would have been getting roasted. Like, oh, well, look, they're the shitty Suns organization again. And Sarver, who is a terrible owner by all accounts. You know, I had a Suns fan friend telling me that, like, there are fans in that fan base who are like now defending Sarver, like, oh, he's turned the leaf, all because of like one winning season. And so really, with any organization in pro sports, you can turn a molehill into a mountain out of any particular incident, any particular issue, if the team is losing and the team continues to lose, right? If the Pelicans come out of this in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever, and Zion wants out and he's leaving, and the Pelicans haven't been successful in that time, all of these stories are going to come out and more, right? You're going to have all of these things come out about how, oh, like, you know, David Griffin did this, or Stan Van Gundy did this, or BI did this, or whatever. Like, everyone's going to have something to say about it. But if it's one of those situations where, you know, this is a deep playoff team for the next 3 or 4 years, none of that stuff gets published. None of that stuff gets talked about. And that's just the business. And that's what it's going to come down to, is the Pelicans being able to put forth a team that is good.
Yeah. Do you see, I mean, is there a scenario where, You know, I think we all understand that the Pelicans and Stan Van Gundy are, you know, they're good. There's that relationship's going to keep going. The question is how long. I mean, do you feel like there's any sort of real risk with his employment status? I mean, let's say like next year that it, you know, they achieve about expectations or slightly below, like not crashing and burning. I mean, do you see a situation where like player relationships cause a need to move on from Stan? It sounds like that doesn't feel like a big risk, but I want to gauge where you're at on that.
I think it's on the table. Okay. I think, you know, I said it in one of the spaces that like, I'd be shocked if Stan gets a second contract with the team, mainly because I think that's more on Stan. I think he'll want out of coaching by then. He's pretty old, and this is a very taxing job. I think he'll want out of coaching by then. And I think at that point, the Pelicans hopefully, you know, are ready to take another step up. And then, you know, you brought in the teacher, you brought in the guy who set the foundation and taught them how to be basketball players. And then you bring in the ceiling raiser, right? Kind of like in theory, what you were supposed to do with Bonte and Alvin, and, you know, never really played out that way. Kind of what happened with Mark Jackson and Steve Kerr, or, you know, Nick, like Dwayne Casey and Nick Nurse. And it's in one of those situations where you would like that to be next. Obviously it's impossible to predict the future, but I do think it's on the table that, like, you know, if next year's disappointing and the players are dissatisfied with Stan as a result of it, again, like fair or unfair, I think there's definitely a world that exists where the players don't, or, you know, just say they've had enough of Stan by next year if they aren't good. And if that's the case, I can see them parting ways, whether it's Stan deciding to retire or them actually firing Stan. I think the retirement's more likely than a firing. I think Stan's pretty prideful. Yeah. But you know, I've already told you my conspiracy theory. My conspiracy theory, and this is completely unsourced, and so, like, do not run with this, guys, if you're this is completely unsourced. There's no basis of truth to this. I don't
my think favorite so. Part of the podcast. Let's go.
but my conspiracy theory is that they're grooming Teresa Witherspoon to be the heir of Stan Van Gundy. And so, like, if the issue comes down to player relationships, well, who has player relationships in the bag? That's Teresa Witherspoon. Like, the players respect the hell out of her, and Zion respects the hell out of her, which is the most important thing. Obviously, you want, you know, all 15 players or all 17 players to be on the same page here. But you know, the players absolutely respect the hell out of her. She has a lot of cachet league-wide. A lot of players league-wide respect her, and so I think when you're you know, if it's going to be Zion's third coach in however many years, then it's an easier transition to promote someone in-house who's kind of already there. And we've seen it with David Griffin when he fired Blatt, and he promoted Ty Lue in the middle of the season. And so it's not. I'm not taking that completely off the table for things to deteriorate enough, but that's going to be David Griffin's job, is to supply them with a roster and make sure they don't deteriorate. Yeah. Because things are infinitely more combustible when you're losing. And, you know, David Blatt was fired after a winning season. But, and so it's not, you know, it's not exclusive to losing or winning. It's just,
so was Monty.
right. And so it's not exclusive to that. It's just things are more combustible when you're losing. One perspective I did want to bring up, I think I failed to mention, is that, you know, there are going to be players who just don't take the coaching, no matter like who the coach is, unless they're like a truly like laissez-faire players only type coach. And we saw that in Minnesota when Tom Thibodeau was there. We saw how Wiggins and Towns kind of responded to that. And now I think Wiggins is a different player since then, but it's taken being traded for, you know, like they sent assets to move him, and then being put in on the Warriors for him to like come to that realization that, oh, okay, like, you know, like I need to change my mentality a little bit. But you know, there's going to be players you just can't get to. And to me, you know, if you're one of those players, this is just my opinion speaking, if you're one of those players who take issue with being coached hard and just want easy practices, That's more telling of the player to me than it is of the coach. And I would take a good hard look at if I want those players around my players I hope to grow with.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it's this is the gold standard, but like I think about the Spurs and Pop, and it's to a point. Obviously, players around the league respect Popovich for what he's done in his career and the type of guy he is. But also, it's just almost as much on the Spurs and the type of players that they typically bring in. I mean, obviously, you're going to get situations like Kawhi and from time to time. But I think broadly speaking, they found players that, you know, they feel like not just fit their system, but will fit the culture in San Antonio. And so, I mean, it can conflict at times with our recent conversation around just get talented players. But I think there is a real argument to be made for finding the right types of guys and maybe just like the ones that absolutely are not going to be receptive to coaching. Those are the guys you want to think differently about. Just kind of depends, you know?
Especially if you haven't done anything in the league yourself as a player, you know, like you're on your first contract and you haven't made the playoffs ever. You haven't contributed winning in a high level. Like if you have certain opinions, you're entitled to them, right? Athletes aren't robots. Like they're allowed to not enjoy their place of work. They're allowed to have work preferences. You know, they're all human at the end of the day. But when you're trying to set aside individual goals for the collective, which is an essential part of team sports, some of that stuff isn't conducive. And you know, it's funny you bring up the Spurs. Like, people will be shocked, it's people think that like Tim and Manu and Tony and them always got along with each other and Pop, and like I think you guys will be shocked about some of the stories with Tony Parker, and how the Spurs may have felt about him at certain points in his career. And it's just one of those things where if you win, no one cares. No one cares at all. And, you know, you do your job and you kind of get it done. Right. I mean, like Kawhi won a championship with the Spurs and then, you know, he had a falling out, whatever. It happens. And then the Spurs moved on and Kawhi moved on. But if the Spurs, if, you know, were a historically losing franchise and Kawhi did that, you know, they'd be laughed at.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think we've covered the situation with enough nuance, I'd say. Do you feel like there's any spots where we can elaborate more?
No, I think we've hit it pretty well and talked a little about hypotheticals even moving forward. But I don't think I have anything else. What about you?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to watch this offseason and see what they do. I think some of these stories you can share more in posterity after things have been said and done. And, you know, there's a time and place. Like, I think on this pod, we've talked about, you know, stories with Anthony Davis. We've talked about stories, when Monty was around and all of that, things that may have been happening behind the scenes. And yeah, so I think it'll be interesting to see if we can reflect upon this at a later date, whether this comes crashing and burning down or, you know, whether this results in a resounding success. We'll certainly be able to look back and see like, hey, this is the things that happened and this is where they let them.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like we should do that maybe at some point over the next couple of weeks. We both like listen to our season preview podcast that we did. I assume we did one, and then kind of revisit the things that we either got right or wrong. Given how the season went, probably a little bit more wrong than right. And just see, and talk about it. I think it'd be interesting.
Absolutely. Anyways, thanks for listening, folks. And, I know there's probably some of you that are going to get angry at this, that we didn't name names and we said a bunch of stuff that could be speculation, whatever, man, if that's what you want to take from it, go for it. But yeah, thanks for listening. Hope you all had a good time.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.